It is good to be with you this morning. Is the volume on this? Did I get enough?
Yes.
Is the volume okay?
Yes.
All right. Dwelling in the Word is a chance for us to dwell in. I will be spending most of the Word inviting us to dwell in some scripture passages. Although tomorrow I will have a copy of a quote, a longer quote from Richard Rohr. If you don't know him, he's one of my favorite people. He's a Franciscan, a brilliant mind, and I find some of his stuff pretty challenging, and so I thought we might dwell in some of his words tomorrow. But to start, I'm just going to read, since it's called Broken Table, and I'm going to give you the whole backstory today, so you may come today with a couple questions. I even listened to Lindsay trying to announce it this morning. Dwelling in the Word, Broken Table, Church on Pilgrim. I mean, it's like too many ideas all wrapped into one, but that's kind of the way my brain works. So, it is the theme is Broken Table, and I thought I would tell a couple table stories from Scripture. So first, from the second chapter of John. The Passover of the Jews were near, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. In the temple, he found people selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and the money changers seated at their tables. Making a whip of cords, he drove all of them out of the temple, both the sheep and the cattle, and he poured out the coins of money changers and overturned their tables. And another table story from John chapter 13. Now before the festival of the Passover, Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from this world and to go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The devil had already put it into the heart of Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray him. And during supper, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, he got up from the table, took off his outer robe, tied a towel around himself, and then he poured water into the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was tied around him. I'm calling these living word sessions Broken Table. And it's a name that continues from an experiment I did in my backyard this past summer. It was an attempt to bring a varied group of people together, an attempt to find a safe place for conversation, specifically about being community that explores faith in relationship. So a lot of times I think we explore faith through reading or through our minds, but I really wanted to explore faith through relationship. For me, the table is a symbol of community, and I think it is for many of us, the heart of a gathering people. I mean, I see it, I've only been here 2 days, and I feel like I've had a bunch of mini communities sitting around tables as we eat meals together. Come on in. You may want a Bible. There's some on the rack there. There's a couple here. And then you may want to write some notes, too, if you'd like. There you go. Yeah. Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you. So here's some paper and pens, too. Yeah.
Did you get a brochure? May we have one of those?
Oh, I guess I'll let you have paper and pen. Does anybody else, while we're doing this, does anybody else need some? And this is just, if you've got your own paper, if you got your own journals, that's
okay.
Fine, too.
This is just in case.
Yeah, this is just in case.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll be really digging into some scripture from the chapter of Mark at the end of our time together today. But I kind of wanted to front load our conversation today with kind of perhaps a better understanding of where we're headed this week. So this concept of a table and gathering around them, when it comes to Christian gatherings and church communities, I think if we're honest with ourselves, and the culture that we live in. And I think perhaps you may have already noticed that our Christian gatherings, that the church tables that we have gathered around are breaking, if not already broken. And when the tables are whole, and you would say, no, on my church table, to use that as a metaphor for your gathering space where you worship on Sundays, it says, no, we're doing pretty well. But if we're honest, I think the people gathering around those tables is becoming less and less. Our tables are sparsely populated. The Christian culture, and this is going to be the risk that I'm going to take with you, but this is kind of my premise. I believe that the Christian culture that we have normalized, the human confines and systems and practice that we've grown accustomed to, these things no longer speak to much of today's culture. And I believe our tables are ready to be upturned and that we need to find a way to begin again. So whether or not you think the gospel is relevant to North American folk, I happen to think it's incredibly relevant. We have to acknowledge that the ways in which we have encased it in our churches needs to be broken open. It needs to be broken open and looked at. And I have been chewing on this for quite some time. So a little bit about me. I was ordained about 13 years ago now. My ordination date is the feast day of Mary Magdalene. So I was ordained on the day of the first apostle of the apostles. If you didn't know that, the first apostle was a woman. And so she is my feast day. And then I was a pastor. My first call was in a very large programmatic church in La Crosse, Wisconsin. A very healthy congregation. Lively, tons of stuff happening. It was a place that people loved to come. I mean, the Sunday school was booming. We had over 100 kids in Sunday school. We had three services, tons of amazing things happening. It was even a great gathering space for community. So, I mean, really, the doors of the church were open so community members could kind of come in and use the building. I mean, we had some senior exercise classes. We had the variety of anonymous groups that were meeting there, right? And so it was a very welcome place. The church didn't just think about their own lives, but they were really reaching out to the community and to the world. If you looked at some of their charitable things, there was much for us as church people to be proud of. A great example, I would argue, of a thriving table. And yet, I watched who we attracted. Basically, I would argue it was churched people. Now, if you were to look at the numbers of churched people coming in, our numbers were higher when it came to people who had not really been going to church over the last handful of years. We know this because, of course, we did statistics at church member orientations, and so we knew these numbers, and we knew that the people that we were drawing were perhaps lesser church, but I still was very aware that these were folks that were still versed in some of the language that we use as Sunday morning worshiping people. And I want to be clear, though, that I think that it's not just the unchurched that have been ceasing to come to our congregations. It's not just the lesser churched who aren't showing up anymore. I believe it's some of the most faithful that have stopped attending our churches. Author Diana Butler Bass, is that somebody who's familiar to anyone? I love her. I've got one of her books. So there's in her introduction to her book, Grounded, where she's really kind of laying out a case for maybe what our homework is as church people. She's author of like 9 books with titles like Christianity After Religion, Christianity for the Rest of Us. In her book, Grounded, she says that she believes that people like who are going less and less to church, so people like her meeting people who are steeped in this. I mean, I would count her as a scholar and theologian, like really lives and breathes this church. People like her who are going less and less to church are not doing so because they prefer Sunday brunch or sports events. She says they're not too busy or even lacking moral passion. This is what she says. She says, we are not lazy. We are not self-centered or individualistic church shoppers. We are heartbroken. Heartbroken by the fact that the faith traditions that have raised us and that we love seem to be sleeping through the revolution. So what is this revolution, you may ask? Well, while people are leaving churches in droves, research is telling us that it's not due to disbelief. So please hear that. People are leaving church communities, and it has nothing to do, well, it may have something to do, but it is not primarily due to disbelief. Findings from a 2012 general social survey says that the quarrel seems to be with organized religion. So the revolution that Diana Butler Bass is talking about is how people are going about belief. They're not totally disconnecting from belief. It's just the religious organizations. And there's this underswell, this kind of percolation that's happening, and it's totally off the church's radar, which is her heartache and mine as well. Now, when it comes to the people who are kind of off the church map these days, I have to say, lately, I've been bumping into them all the time. And this is because 2 years ago, I decided to leave my congregation. It was actually a very difficult decision because we all loved each other well, and I felt like I was well equipped for the work that we were doing, and I loved my pastoral colleague, but it was my first call, and I had been there 11 years. And frankly, I was exhausted. Programmatic churches are just busy places. And I was tired. And my husband was, you know, gainfully employed in La Crosse where we were living. And so I decided to step away from a church. And I had been in spiritual direction at a Franciscan spirituality center. And so I came to step into a role there where I worked as a program and retreat coordinator there for a year. And that is really where I started. I already kind of had some people in my community, but when you live and dwell in a church, you don't always cross paths with, there's a guy named Michael Gunger, he calls them the spiritually homeless. you know, they're not unbelievers, they're not even necessarily super jaded, they're just kind of spiritually homeless. And spirituality centers are a wonderful place to cross paths with. So I was starting to have some really meaningful conversations there. And then because I left the church, that meant I actually had more of a human schedule, and I had time to join the roller derby, which I had wanted to do forever, but the church schedule didn't allow for it. So I joined the roller derby. You know anything about roller derby women? They're pretty rough and tumble. You know, I've known self-proclaimed pagans in the past, but these were probably some of my closer friends. I mean, everything on the gamut, from atheists to agnostics to... And I guess what surprised me as I started in there, because I just assumed, right, you know, that the spiritually homeless, that they're more individualistic, that they really don't care, and they've been jaded by organized religion, right, and they've got no time for it. But what surprised me is the more and more that I kind of entered into a relationship with these folks, and I got brave. I think it didn't really happen until I got courageous. I think I was always worried about offending them, so I kind of was a closeted Christian. You know, I didn't want to talk about it too much. But once I kind of opened myself up a little bit, I was amazed at how ready people were to engage in conversation. So the big surprise for me was when it comes to the spiritually homeless, they're not sort of like this, I don't really care about organized religion, and I'm just happy to, you know, go walk in the forest or sit with my journal or do an individual pursuit. But there was this hunger for wanting to be in community to kind of flesh this faith thing out. And I'm not sure they would call it faith. I mean, I think that's part of our challenge is how do we find language for this? So, let's see. Jumped in. By the way, teaching 5 days in a row for an hour at a time is probably the biggest jump that I've ever met. And so I've been having like a hard time. I'm used to preaching for about 15 minutes on a Sunday, maybe an hour adult forum. So I'm trying to keep me on track. So I knew that people wanted to come together. And I feel like we, as religious people, are missing the boat to change things. Because I really do believe that this is a need for us. Now, I do want to make this caveat, this kind of clarification here. When I talk about the church needing to change and the church, and this is why we're going to go on a pilgrimage, because I believe Pilgrimages oftentimes are a physical external change that help an internal change happen. And the physical pilgrimage we're going to kind of have to do with our imaginations. I mean, you're on a little bit of a pilgrimage coming to Holden Village, so I'm hoping you're sensing some of the physicality of that. But we'll be imagining ourselves into that. But I believe that there's some changes that we need to make, and that's what we're going to be talking about. And I don't have all the answers. I'm actually hoping you all are going to have some good ideas. So there's going to be a dialogue component to our mornings together. But I do want to be clear about this. When we think about how the church needs to change to try and connect with these spiritually homeless, unchurched, lesser church nuns and duns, I mean, I've heard every word under the sun. I want to be clear that it's not about getting their butts in the pews. And maybe that was an assumption to you. It's not about how do we get those people into our spaces so that we can meet our church budget. And even if you want to say, no, we don't care about butts in the pews, we don't care about money, we just care about the gospel. We got to get them the gospel, you know, the Great Commission, right? Go forth and baptize and all that. I would even argue it's not about that. My premise, and I believe that we need them, that we are all created in the image of God. And it's not about us bringing the gospel to these spiritually homeless people out there, but I believe they have as much of a share of that gospel as we do. And until we figure out how to hang together with all our differing opinions and all the conflict and all the pain and discomfort and whatever that's going to, we are going to be starving. I feel like the church is starving. Like that we've just lost our balanced diet, if you will, of the diversity of human beings that I believe God has created on purpose. Because we've gotten into our little cultural enclaves where we have felt safe. And I wrestle with this because I know churches need to be a place where we can come when we've had a messy week, when we've had, you know, that scary diagnosis, when that relationship has broken. I get it. You don't want to come to a church where everything you feel like is being upturned all the time. But is there a way that we can still create a safe space where we all feel like we're coming home, but there's still a room for differences of how we go about doing that. So I guess I want to pause here to kind of let us introduce. I didn't know how many people were going to be in the room, so I'm kind of sensing it might take a little long for us to get through and everybody introduce themselves to each other. But maybe if you could... Let me just at least start with this. How many would identify yourselves as kind of Lutheran, or at least you speak Lutheran? Okay. I'm trying to think. How many people have been to church, even though it's been summer, you've probably been to church most weeks over the summer? Most weeks over the summer. I'm just trying to get a sense of it. Okay. Because that was going to be my sense. You know, I figured September at Holden Village, so it's going to be folks that have time in their lives where they can come here. And I'm eager to hear where some of this discussion over these next days makes you uncomfortable. I want to hear about that. And I want us to wrestle with it. But if maybe if you...
So you want us to be uncomfortable?
That's what pilgrimage is all about. I mean, this is why I very intentionally picked the concept of pilgrimage. Because if you're doing it right, and today's the day, the first day, I mean, even before you set on a pilgrimage, even before you start to pack, you have to set an intention, right? You kind of have to decide. When my husband and I were talking about coming here to live for a year, we were talking with the directors, they said, so have you had kind of a, we don't know what to call, you know, I mean, they sort of said, have you had a call story? I mean, that sounds very formal, but they're like, was there this moment where it was just kind of clear to you that this was where you were supposed to come? And Greg and I both talked, and we said, yeah, you know, we can call back to that moment. They're like, good, you're going to need it, because there's going to be points in this year where you're really questioning why the heck you came, right? So if you're going on a pilgrimage, if you're going on a journey, right, you need to set an intention. You need to kind of have this thing of, this is why I'm doing this. Because there's going to be points, whether it's when you're packing, because tomorrow I'm going to be talking about what it was like to pack up, because we sold our house before coming here. And just to think about that, if we were to pack up our church and we could only take the bare essentials, right? What do you leave behind? What do you take with you? What do you grieve the loss of? Because there's plenty of things that I grieve the loss of. I had to sell some antiques, right? I mean, there's a grieving process. So I really want us, so today I want us to think about, like, what is our intention? And maybe it's just to be okay with being uncomfortable. Maybe there's some little aspect of your own experience in church that, you know, that you want to see if that could test. Like, I really think this kernel of church is important, so I kind of want to pick it up like a stone and stick it in my pocket and carry it with me on this journey, right? I mean, people do that as pilgrims. They take, and sometimes it's a problem, sometimes it's a pain or a grief that they've had, sometimes it's a hope, right? And you get to the end, if you've ever heard anything about the Camino de Santiago in Spain, right? You get to the end of this long journey, there's this big pile of rocks, right? Because people have carried these stones with them. And so maybe that might be helpful to you, to grab a coin or a stone or something, and during the day. So I'm not requiring you to set your intention before 10 a.m., right? You've got some time today to think, talk to people, sit in quiet, maybe pick up a stone or an object. I mean, maybe it's something that you've carried in your suitcase with you, and to kind of hang on to it as a physical reminder of what your intention is. So I want to give you kind of a moment to process where we're at. I feel like I've said some things that may feel a little bit radical to some of you, and I want to give you a chance to just kind of talk to people around you. So I would invite you to get into groups of like threes, just sort of turn to the people next to you, twos and threes, and just kind of process a little bit out loud what you've heard. If you have any concerns, if there's something here that's kind of exciting, and even if you are starting to have an idea of what you think your intention is, to give voice to that. So just take a moment to kind of talk to each other.
The intention thing, I was not always, what's my intention?
I don't know, you gotta figure that out. So what I mean by that is, so when I talked about, like, for Greg and me coming here for a year, so there's sort of that moment where we decided that this was really important to us, and we have sort of a narrative in our own minds as to why making the pilgrimage to Holden is why we've come. And so even when you hit adversity, even when you hit, you know, you can come back to that moment, because there will be days when everything around you is like, what the heck?
So are we asking what is the intention of our religious thought?
I would just say, what is your intention for, you know, it's funny, I appreciate this, because you're forcing me to tease this out, because I was wrestling with this myself. So I would say, if you were to think about taking your church, and it could be your faith, on pilgrimage, like, what do you think your faith community could gain from a journey like this? Where you're forced to downsize, you're forced to, you know, pack lightly, you're going to be forced to go to surroundings that are totally new and unfamiliar, you're going to come up against challenges, times when you're physically tired, emotionally tired, mentally. I mean, you look at some of these PCT through hikers, right, and some of the stuff that they've been through. So if you were to drag your church through that, what might be your intention? So you can kind of think collectively about your congregation, but maybe you want to set a personal intention. Like, if I were to go on that kind of journey with my church, what would I want to hold on to? Or perhaps there's been this thing that I've been in conflict with my pastor, or there has been this thing that I've been in conflict with that other church person, right? And maybe you want to hold that and look at it this week to see if there's something that God wants to teach you about that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I was just picking up a rock.
I feel like sometimes we need physical reminders.
Yeah.
So the rock is just, you know, like, it could be this pen.
Okay.
You know, like, yeah.
My intention, and I know this is to be a small group kind of thing, but I'm sort of surrounded by family, so they know it. And I have thought since I've been coming here, because for as long as I've come to Holden, I have thought of staying, you know, for a lengthy period of time, my husband and I. I have lost him 5 months ago to death, and so now I'm grieving, and so where do I belong now in this broken table?
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know if that's what you're looking for.
That's exactly what. And I think that's the hardest part to teach on this, because it's so personal for each one of us. So I thank you for being attentive to that. Because I think for some of you, I mean, you're just going to, and your intention honestly may not occur to you until Thursday. Like, oh, this is what I, you know, and that's okay too. So don't feel like you failed if you get here tomorrow and you still don't have an intention. You know, we'll work on that. It may kind of come to, and I think a lot of times that's actually true for pilgrims. Sometimes they just know they need to go. And you don't really figure out why you're there until you're knee deep in the muck of it. So that's okay too. That's okay too. So I just know that I'm an external processor. And so I really need to give some of you for whom that's true, and especially some of you who might not feel comfortable raising your hand and talking and asking questions, I really want to give you a chance to talk to the person next to you. So if you're close to family and want to get up and move to somebody new, that would be great. But please make sure you look around you to make sure folks are included in conversation, but also feel free to say if you're like, nope, I really don't want to talk to anybody, we honor that as well. So. But please, just take kind of a moment to kind of process kind of maybe what you've reacted to that surprised you today, or some hopes that you have for how we're going forward, concerns. Is that all right? Just we'll just take maybe 5 minutes. Doesn't need to be long.
Yeah. This is more individual as opposed to...
I'm going to keep myself moving forward. I appreciate your engagement in the task, and I would also appreciate conversation if you kind of want to grab me throughout the week and just kind of take some time to share one-on-one. I would love that. Because for me, I think this kind of stuff through in community. Do know that I will be asking for you to kind of dig in, and we'll be talking with each other as a group as the week progresses, but I've just got a little bit more material that I want to get through today to kind of get us started so you know where we're headed. So I began planning for these days here at Holden, and I really wanted a map, right? I wanted sort of a clear kind of understanding for what it was that I was being expected to teach. As a preacher, I'm given texts from a weekly lectionary. For those of you that are familiar with a lot of mainline congregations, there's a three-year lectionary that we work from. But for Living Word, for this moment in time, the scope is quite broad. It says grab a sacred text, it could be Christian or otherwise, and then pick a theme, like a current issue. Well, I wanted more of a map than that. Last winter, I was sitting at my kitchen table with my husband. And this is the little, this was supposed to be a little teaser in the description of this. We were eating nachos. My husband's comfort food is nachos, and he will even go so far as to make homemade tortilla chips. And so we're sitting at the table eating homemade nachos for dinner, and I had picked up some beer to go with it. It was a microbrewery I had not heard of and a name I couldn't pronounce, but the name of the beer, which was called Black Sheep, caught my eye. Partly because it was a black lager and I was on this black lager kick, but partly because of the nod to my own self-perception, black sheep. In my family, I always joked that I was the white sheep. But among the religious, especially among rule-following religious, I have felt much more like the odd one out. So as I sat crunching on my nachos, and attempting to create the perfect chip. You know, you've done that before, right? Where you got to get right on that, yeah? My beloved husband started peppering me with questions like, so, you feel like you're called to start something different. When are you going to do something about that? Feeling like an odd sheep in the midst of more uniform church sheep, I have wondered about my call for some time. I feel good about following Jesus. I even feel pretty convicted about this whole pastor gig that I'm in. But as far as the church I'm not so sure about. So I've been trying to reimagine Christian community for a while.
And that night over nachos, as Greg asked me some questions about this whole endeavor, I noticed the Black Sheep beer label on the little six-pack sitting there in the middle of our kitchen table. And it's the Uinta Brewing Company in Salt Lake City, Utah. Anybody a fan of Uinta beer? No? Okay. I hadn't heard of it either. I kept saying Unita, but it's Uinta. Anyway, the Uinta Brewing Company, and on right there on their little beer casing, there is a description, a version of their own story, if you will, right there on the label. So I'm going to read it to you, because this was my moment of intention, if you will. This was kind of like the skies broke open in my kitchen as I was reading this beer label, and I felt like the good Lord was talking to me. So here we go. Are you ready for the great wisdom? This is what it said. We've been brewing and exploring since 1993, and here's what we've learned. There's no one right way to get anywhere. I'm going to say that again. There's no one right way to get anywhere. What you need isn't a well-trod path. It's a compass to trust as you cut your own. Mm-hmm. I'm going to read that again. Because as Christians, this should be just kind of raising the hairs on the back of your neck a little bit. Here's what we've learned. There's no one right way to get anywhere. What you need isn't a well-trod path. It's a compass to trust as you cut your own. And then I thought, as perhaps some of you have, I thought about Jesus in the Gospel of John that I have read at many a funeral, saying, I am the way and the truth and the life, and nobody comes to the Father but through me. And then I thought of the freedom of the compass and charting our own path. I thought of the allure of uncharted territory. And I thought of the power of the gospel to include and redeem. And I started to wonder, is it possible that we have been interpreting this John 14 text with far too narrow of a focus? What if Jesus as the way is not actually a fixed path? What if his way is a manner of doing things or even a movement, right? The original followers of Jesus were not known as Christians, but followers of the way. The way can be a movement. So this week, I have wanted to find a way to get us moving. And in these morning sessions, we will enter onto an imagined pilgrimage. I mean, what if we were to take the church on pilgrimage? We would have to leave our structures of security behind and pack light. We would need to trust the people and the circumstances that we encounter. On pilgrimage, you trust others to provide you with adequate, and I would even argue, life-giving resources along your journey. I mean, like our thru-hikers, I bumped into this guy, scruffy beard, older than me, who's just hiked the PCT, right? And he said, I got in here at 10 o'clock last night. I heard there's a place to register so I could get food. Right? I mean, what if we were to take our church on a journey like that? What would you take with you? And what would you leave behind? Now, those two questions are really going to be the heart of our discussion tomorrow. But again, before you start making some of the hard decisions of what you take with you and what you leave behind, we need an intention. Christine Painter, in her book on pilgrimage, notes that pilgrimage calls us to be attentive to the divine at work in our lives through deep listening and patience, through opening ourselves to the gifts that arise in the midst of discomfort, and going out to our own inner wild edges to explore new frontiers. So by the gift of imagination, and I'm hoping by the frame of pilgrimage that I think physically we've taken, even just to be here in Holden, that we can kind of emotionally, mentally, even spiritually enter into this journey together. So two things I'm going to do with you. Actually, well, I thought we might walk through the Gospel of Mark, but I'm feeling like that's less important right now. It's a pretty long text, and if you guys were in church last Sunday, you heard it anyway. I have a guided meditation that Christine Painter wrote. It takes about 11 minutes, and so that would bring us right to the end of our hour. Would you be comfortable with that? Have you ever done a guided meditation? For those of you that haven't, I love it because I love using my imagination. So this might be a little bit foreign to you, and we'll probably do at least one more, if not two more, this week. I'm still kind of putting together. Thank you so much for coming. The last couple of pieces together to kind of finish out. Part of me wanted to feel you guys out to decide where we're going, so and how we'll end up. Because really, pilgrims alongside you on the journey, I think, help shape your journey as much as your own intention to be on that journey itself. So. All right, great. So we'll do this. And I just invite you to be comfortable. It may be most comfortable for you to, like, anything that you have in your lap to kind of set down. Probably close your eyes, unless that freaks you out, if you feel more grounded. Sometimes it's sort of like we use this in labyrinths. It's sort of like a natural gaze. I forget what the percentage is. But so you're not, like, up and looking around the room. But you kind of just hold your gaze down, maybe stare towards the fire or at the back of the chair of the person in front of you. Or I welcome you to close your eyes. I had recorded this for myself because I've been using it lately, so I'm actually, you're going to hear my voice, but it's a recording. just reading from Christine Painter's book. And that way I can kind of sit here and do it with you, which will be meaningful for me. Because I feel like I want to be a pilgrim on this journey with you. So let me set my microphone here. And this is how we will close. So again, just take a couple breaths, and the reflection will be inviting you to do that too, and kind of walks you through the process. So make yourselves comfortable and let us enter in. Side. You know, when the phone turns on.
A meditation. Begin by allowing a few moments to sink into the stillness. Deepen your breath and bring it down into your belly so that you feel your belly expanding with each inhale.
Excuse me.
Allow the exhale to be long and slow. Imagine as you breathe in that you are receiving the gift of life, which sustains you moment by moment, even when you are completely unaware of it. As you exhale, imagine that you are releasing, letting go of whatever is not needed for this time. Releasing anything that might be keeping you from being fully present. Become aware of your body. Notice if there are any places of tightness or holding. Bring your breath to those tight places to help soften and release. Now see if you can draw your own awareness with your breath from your head down to your heart center. Placing a hand on your heart to make a physical connection. Rest there a moment and just notice what you are experiencing without trying to change it. See if you can be with your feelings without judgment, bringing compassion to wherever you find yourself right now. There is an infinite source of compassion which dwells in our hearts. Breathe in that compassion. In your imagination, see yourself at a doorway. Spend some time being with the door and notice its qualities. What are the colors and textures of the door? Is it old or new? Has it been worn with time? Or is it shiny? Is it closed or slightly ajar? See if you can be with whatever image comes to mind without trying to change it. Imagine yourself pausing here, knowing that as you cross this threshold, you enter into a liminal kind of time. Kairos, as the ancients called it. This is time outside of time, where you will enter and encounter both challenges and grace along the way. In threshold space, you are in between. You are invited to rest into unknowing about what the journey will bring, about even where you are going exactly. Notice what you are carrying with you. And see if there is anything you can set aside before you begin this journey. What you are carrying might be objects and possessions. They might also be beliefs or attitudes about yourself, life, or God. What could you set down on the ground and leave for this time? What are the essentials that you want to have with you? What feels important to carry? when you feel ready, open the door and step across the threshold. Now pause there on the other side. What do you see? Taste. Smell. Feel. Hear. Allow yourself some time just to be with whatever felt experience arises. Stand here for a while, taking in the full spectrum of what you are feeling. Welcome in joy, excitement, fear, trepidation, anxiety, and whatever else is arising with an open heart. Call on that compassion once again. Offer a prayer here at the threshold for whatever your heart's desire is for this time ahead. Speak from your heart about whatever it is you long for most. Make a commitment to continue showing up. Remember this place, knowing that you will be journeying forward from here into unknown territory.
And now take a couple deep breaths as you return to this current place. And my prayer is that this place of compassion that exists within all of us each and every day can hold some of the wonderings and questions that we will have, and also give space to a fierce hope. May God bless you in your day. And I will just say this, I totally know how holding schedules go. So if you end up sleeping in tomorrow, or if you end up in a long conversation after breakfast, my feelings are not hurt, and you're welcome to come back the next day. So don't be like, oh, I missed one day. No, she's going to be mad, and I shouldn't go back. No, I know how Holden Village days go. So come and go as you please. I would love to have you participate. And blessings as you kind of come to an intention and maybe even just sort of sense of purpose for being part of this conversation. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you.